This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1. This is Bob Fetrakis bringing you The Other Side of the News. You're listening to WGRN 94.1, The Green Renaissance. And we've got one of the great greeners of the planet with us, someone that's had a tremendous impact on Ohio, with Ohio roots, Nathan Runkle, the founder and president of Mercy for Animals. A simple concept, but as I recall, Nathan, not one that was being practiced when you were growing up.
That's right. I was born and raised on a small crop farm in St. Paris, Ohio, about 40 minutes north of Dayton. And, you know, like most people in rural Ohio, I grew up with a natural love and connection both to animals but also to the land and to nature. But I very much was taught that there is a difference between dogs and cats and animals that we consider to be friends and companions and animals that are raised for food, cows and pigs and chickens. And from a very early age, however, I didn't really agree with this. To me, I could not see a difference between these animals other than our perception of them. And certainly if we remove our own bias from the equation, it's clear to see that when it comes to the ability to feel pain and suffering, but also joy and happiness, excitement, and love and sorrow, cows and pigs and chickens are just the same as dogs and cats. So I've had an evolution over time that has ultimately led me to found an organization dedicated to presenting farmed animals who suffer in the greatest numbers, who have the fewest friends and allies and the least legal protection.
And you've got a new book out, Mercy for Animals, and that was written in part with Gene Stone, and you have subtitled it One Man's Quest to Inspire Compassion and Improve the Lives of Farm Animals. Thinking about what you just said, I'm always given cause to remember, because I've campaigned on occasion up at the state fair, and it seems somewhat brutal that many of these kids up there in 4-H, I have clearly bonded with these animals, and then they're supposed to step aside and let them be slaughtered.
Well, that is absolutely my experience. You know, I think that we are born innately compassionate. You know, there's a saying, if you put a rabbit and an apple in the crib with a young child and they, you know, eat the rabbit and cuddle the apple, then, you know, they're, all bets are off. But if it's the other way around, then it's certainly considered normal. And I grew up with that being the experience as well. Most of my friends were in 4-H, and they would raise cows and pigs. And the very first year of the fair, they would be heartbroken when these animals were led away from them, sometimes dragged away from them to be sold by the pound for meat. But we're told and taught that that's just the way it is. That's what these animals are here for. And this is an unpleasant reality of our system. But by the time the second year comes around, the children have started to grow separated from these animals, and they're still sad, but they allow it to happen. The third year, they become more okay with it typically. In the fourth year, you know, they're more behind it. So there is this sort of desensitizing that takes place to children in this teaching that it is okay for animals to be used for whatever purpose we deem fit, and that they should really just be treated as commodities. And that has led us down a very dangerous path. And in fact, it was an incident regarding a Future Farmers of America class that ultimately led me to start Mercy for Animals 18 years ago. And this is a case at my local high school in St. Paris, where there's a teacher of the class who was a pig farmer. And the very first day of one of these classes, he came to school with a bucket of piglets that he had tried to kill that morning on his farm. But when he arrived, one of these piglets was still alive. So a student in the class walked over, grabbed the piglet by her hind legs, and slammed her head first into the ground. Now, a few of the students were just appalled by this.
No doubt.
Absolutely. I mean, sickening. A few of the students were appalled by this, grabbed this dying piglet, left the classroom, went down the hall to another teacher who was known as being sympathetic to animal cruelty, named Molly. Molly left, went to the local veterinarian, and had this piglet euthanized. Her next stop was to the sheriff's department, where she filed a complaint for animal cruelty. And ultimately, charges were filed in the case against the teacher of the agriculture class.
Now, did that get some media attention? Coming back to me. I remember reading about this.
Yeah, this was back in 1999. So, you know, 18 years ago, it got press in the local paper, and rightfully so. Now, it went to trial, but the very first day of that trial, those charges were dismissed. Because in Ohio, like most states, if something is considered standard agricultural practice, it's exempt from cruelty prosecution. And this practice of slamming baby piglets headfirst into the ground is considered standard practice. It's called thumping in the pork industry, blunt head trauma. And we still document it across the country every single day. So there's a huge disconnect in our society legally between what we consider cruel and inhumane if we carry it out to a dog or a cat versus a piglet. So if this had been a puppy that was brought to the school who is slammed headfirst into the ground, the outcome likely would have been very different. The teacher and the student involved would have been, you know, banned from owning animals, referred for psychiatric evaluation, and largely would have faced jail time.
Well, as we say at the Free Press, pig lives matter. In part, because our pet pig, Iggy, the potbelly pig, had a column for many years in the Free Press, and I think he may have, in fact, written about this. And as I recall, you used to ghostwrite with Iggy for many of those issues. So now it's coming back to me. I think I read it in Iggy's
coming
column.
Coming back to me as well. Yes, I mean, there are so many issues facing animals. And when most people think about animal use or abuse, we think about dogs or cats, or we think about elephants or pandas. We don't think about animals used for food, but the truth is that they are the 99%. Almost 300 of them are killed every single second in the United States, nearly 9 billion.
You cover some of those stats in your book. And as I recall, isn't that name of one of your chapters?
That's right. One of the chapters is called 300
Every Second. I think you're hitting on some key issues as well as writing about them is this sort of cultural sensitizing people to, okay, these are pets, dogs and cats. You can't be mean to them. But other mammals, for whatever arbitrary reason, you can be mean to it. And I remember when I was little and the big question was always whether there was a doggy heaven. So occasionally you could even get a fundamentalist to concede there was a doggy heaven. But as I grew up and had a pot-bellied pig for 13 years, I would be much more interested in visiting pig heaven. If you get to know pigs, they're very bright and they're very, very smart and social and loyal creatures. But again, you know, it's
that wouldn't be considered, you know, something you would tell a kid, that there's a pig heaven out there. But I believe God doesn't discriminate. There's all his creatures. If there's a heaven, it applies to all of them.
There's certainly no doubt that, again, this isn't a matter of the animals being different. It's a matter of our perception of them being different. And so much of this is really just our sort of Western culture and perception of animals. So many Americans cringe in horror with the idea of dogs or cats being eaten in the Philippines or in Korea or in other countries.
Cambodia.
In Cambodia, we'll say this with a straight face while eating a, you know, bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich and not see the hypocrisy. You know, in India, cows are considered sacred. But here in the United States, we, you know, chain them by their necks and impregnate them over and over again on dairy farms, take their babies away from them, hook them up to machines, and then slaughter them when they're no longer useful. So I think it really is quite a simple issue, and that is that when it comes to every way that matters, all animals deserve the same amount of consideration. And the good news is now we can choose to be kind. You know, I think we're choiceitarians, and we, at least in our country, can choose kindness over cruelty every time we sit down to eat. We can choose a plant-based diet, and it's not only the right thing to do for animals, but it's really the best thing to do for our environment. You know, there was recently a declaration that came out from over 15,000 scientists from 183 countries talking about the absolute state of peril that our planet is in and calling for immediate action to be taken before time is too late. And one of the main things that they said must happen is that we must move towards a plant-based diet. The United Nations is saying the same thing. You know, animal agriculture contributes to more greenhouse gas emissions than the entire transportation sector combined. That's all the trains, planes, and automobiles combined in our country.
Oh, I remember that documentary, Meet the Truth, which the first time I saw it, I was stunned. I began to play it in every single international relations class.
Absolutely. And you know, we are racing towards a global population of about 9.7 billion people by 2050. And, you know, we have to ask ourselves, how is this going to be sustainable for our environment? And raising animals for food and funneling, you know, 9 calories through, you know, a chicken, for example, to get 1 calorie out is not an efficient equation, not when you have a growing number of mouths to feed. So the resource intensity is just astronomical. You know, about 90% of the rainforest that's being destroyed is being destroyed to create grazing land or raising land for corn and soybeans to be fed to animals for meat. So animal suffering aside, we just cannot sustain this. And I think that we're really at just a crucial point in our civilization's history where we must take action now. I mean, it's been estimated that we will have essentially fishless oceans by 2048, mm-hmm. with the overfishing. The amount of whales and dolphins and endangered species that are caught in these huge nets, it's just astronomical. And this is something that we're not powerless about. There are so many things happening in the world, especially now, that we can feel powerless to do anything about. But we're not powerless about the food choices that we make. And not only are we not powerless, but we cannot be bystanders. This is an issue that we cannot be neutral on. We have to make choices every time we sit down to eat. And by moving towards a plant-based diet, we can help protect our environment and help protect animals at the same time.
And this is WGRN 94.1, The Green Renaissance. I'm speaking with Nathan Runkle with his new book out, Mercy for Animals, raising many of the issues concerning our planet. And what about the revelation that seemed to have been withheld by much of the mainstream media and many political organizations about meat as a known top-level carcinogenic.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I mean, we've talked about animals a bit and the environment, but human health is also a victim of animal agriculture, especially this overconsumption of meat, dairy, and eggs, the SAD diet, the standard American diet. And, you know, there's a great documentary on Netflix called What the Health, which is really helping to pull back the layer of just the absolute lack of information that's being shared about the impact of animal products on our health, including by some of the top organizations that are dedicated allegedly to helping eradicate things like heart disease and types of cancers and diabetes. They're not talking about the impact of our diet. This documentary follows the money, and they look at the partnerships with meat companies, with pharmaceutical companies. There's not a lot of money to be made off of healthy people, but the truth is that many of the leading killers in this country can be prevented, and in the case of heart disease, reversed by eating a healthy plant-based diet. I mean, the evidence is absolutely clear. When you look at countries that start to eat more and more diet based on meat, dairy, and eggs, the amount of heart disease, type 2 diabetes, et cetera, skyrockets. This has been well documented for far too long. So, the solution here is to change our diets, move towards a plant-based vegan diet. It's never been easier or more delicious to do that. There are so many products that are now flooding the market that you can get essentially anywhere. That means that you don't have to give up the tastes and flavors that you love. You can just swap them out for the vegan version of them. And I'm talking everything from amazing vegan cheeses to vegan eggs to, of course, veggie burgers and hot dogs. But there's even vegan caviar and lobster now. So regardless of what your taste is, there is an alternative for it that is not only better for your health, but also better for your mind, knowing that you're not contributing to the destruction of the environment and your own health in the process.
Well, one of the things you do in this book that I find interesting as an investigative reporter is to retell some of your first experiences, including what is investigatory journalism at various factory farms. And I don't know what was your relationship to the famous egg farm here in central Ohio and the infamous Anton Pullman. You were able to capture a lot of shocking material on a variety of these factory farms. I'm thinking the one that went viral as well, wasn't it? The Downer cow video. Why don't you tell our listeners a little about those experiences? Because it was really first-rate investigative reporting.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a large part of the book, is talking about and sharing stories from our undercover investigators. And I start this section out with the title Still in the Jungle, a reference to Upton Sinclair's book, The Jungle, that came out just over 100 years ago.
The one that led to the Food and Drug Administration, and supposedly President Wilson gave up his breakfast after reading about the standard practices in the industry at the time.
That's right. And this is a book that led to the first two federal laws regarding conditions inside of slaughterhouses in this country. And, you know, I believe that the investigators that we send in are the Upton Sinclairs of our time. And we, you know, the tagline for the Washington Post is democracy dies in darkness. And I believe that is absolutely true. And what we are seeing is really an all-out attack on these individuals that do investigative journalism. Both within the animal protection movement and outside of it. And it's a dangerous thing. We need this information for a healthy democracy to function. And that's part of the role that our investigators play. They go into factory farms, slaughterhouses, livestock auctions, wired with pinhole-sized hidden cameras, and they document what takes place when the meat industry doesn't think it's being watched. And we've been into over 60 of these factory farms, including many in Ohio that I talk about in the book. Some of the stories are from places like Buckeye Egg Farm, when it was called that, Anton Pullman, as you said, being in charge, and then it changed
name to
Ohio Fresh
The
Egg.
Anton Pullman thing always stunned me because, he was a convicted felon in Germany, and then he began to look where could he get away with these massively cruel practices, and he ends up in Central Ohio. Why?
Well, you know, the state of Ohio wanted his business, is what it boils down to. And yeah, they let a man who was convicted of animal cruelty in Germany to come and set up an operation with, over a course of time, tens of millions of chickens. And I've been inside of these operations, and they are a living nightmare. You know, chickens are incredibly intelligent, you know, curious animals. But on these egg farms, they're kept in tiny wire cages the size of a file cabinet drawer. And each one of these cages confines anywhere from 5 to 7 or more birds. And they live in these cages for their entire lives, which are about 2 years before they are killed. And they can't walk, perch, roost, dust bathe, do anything that's natural to them. They never see the sunlight. They never feel the grass under their feet. They can never build a nest. It is just the worst existence that you could possibly imagine. And being inside of these factory farms in Ohio, not only do you see those conditions, but you also see birds who've died in their cages who are left to rot and decompose, with birds still laying eggs for human consumption. Mm-hmm. You see, we found birds who were trapped in the wire of their cages without access to any food or water. Live birds literally thrown away in trash cans, as if they were nothing more than garbage. Under these cages are huge manure pits where we would find just countless birds wandering down there, some of them submerged in the manure, left to die on their own. And we find this over and over again at egg farms across the country. This isn't isolated to the facilities that Anton Pullman ran. This isn't something that's isolated to Ohio. This is standard operating procedure for these egg factory farms. And this is how currently over 90% of egg laying hens are treated in this country. They're kept in these tiny, what are called battery cages, lined up in huge rows and warehouses the length of a football field or two, and stacked up on top of each other, sometimes 7 tiers high. But I also tell stories in the book from investigations that we've carried out at dairy factory farms, and including a dairy farm in Central Ohio, Conklin Dairy Farm, where we documented workers taking crowbars and bashing cows over the skull 40 times, taking pitchforks and stabbing cows, breaking their tails, shoving fingers into animals' eyes, just sadistic and malicious animal abuse. And we find this over and over again, especially at dairy farms. And so much of it is because some of these workers, they take these jobs out of desperation, but they quickly will become frustrated with the animals that they're left to move. And they start to view these animals as a hurdle to getting their job done, and horrible abuse follows. I also talk about investigations at pig factory farms across the country where mother pigs, and as you mentioned, pigs are more intelligent than dogs. They're more intelligent than 3-year-old children. They're just, you know, these incredible individuals with so much thinking and feeling taking place. But on factory farms, they're locked in tiny crates where they can't even turn around. And not only do they suffer physically, but they suffer emotionally, mental anguish.
And they're
inside of
very emotional creatures. I can attest from my pig, who is quite moody and knew how to open the refrigerator, and also used to knock the phone off the hook when I was talking too long and let me know when he needed to be fed.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, again, with this intelligence comes a rich emotional life. And, you know, these factory farms, yes, they break the skin of these animals. You know, you'll find animals with open wounds and bruising. They break the bones of these animals. But more importantly, perhaps, they break the spirit of these animals. They break family bonds. You know, there's a story that was told by one of our investigators who worked at a pig factory farm in Pennsylvania. And on his first day there, he stepped into one of the sheds, and it was a gestation crate and farrowing crate facility. So these were all mother pigs who had been moved from the gestation crates into the farrowing crates, which are equally confining crates where they can't even turn around, but they give birth in these enclosures. He set foot inside of the sheds, and he noticed that there was one pig in the alleyway of the shed. Following behind her were 10 of her baby piglets. Now, our investigator did some asking around with employees that had been there, and they said, well, what she has done is she has figured out how to use her tongue to unhinge a pin in the door.
Oh, yeah.
That
my pig used to open up my gate with his snout.
So she had liberated herself and her piglets. But what was perhaps equally fascinating and heartwarming is that she didn't stop there. She had gone around and liberated two other mother pigs that were confined.
The Che Guevara of pigs. I love it.
So following behind them were their piglets as well. So, you know, they say that love is the benevolent and unselfish concern for the good of another. And if this was not an altruistic act of love for these other suffering animals, I don't know what it was. Because clearly this mother sow could have enjoyed her freedom and peace, but instead she chose to extend sympathy to other pigs that she knew were suffering in the same way. So there's so much happening behind the scenes on these factory farms, which most people never think about. You know, this is out of sight and out of mind, and that is very intentionally so. The meat industry wants as little attention to their cruel practices as possible. You know, we live in a time when people are becoming more and more sensitized, rightfully so, to the plight of animals and their needs, and have an increased desire for these animals to be protected. But at the same time, we see the factory farm industry confining animals in more and more intensive ways, mutilating animals without pain relief, slitting their throats while they're still conscious, operating in a way that is totally out of line with the values and morals of most people, especially people in this country. So this is why we see things like these ag-gag laws being proposed that, as I said before, seek to criminalize the simple act of taking a photograph of what happens to these animals. And to me, that's a real problem.
All right. Well, we only got about a minute left. This has been a great conversation. Mercy for Animals by Nathan Runkel. His new book, One Man's Quest to Inspire Compassion and Improve the Lives of Farm Animals. And Nathan, I think you're having an effect. Even when I go in the mainstream grocery stores like Kroger, all of them are trying to sell me free-range chickens, no crates. I mean, just words that have moved into the industry that you didn't see 18 years ago when you were one of the great pioneers in this area.
That's absolutely right. I think that we are at a tipping point, and so many people are not only becoming aware and sensitized to the plight of these animals, but they're taking action. And I think we're seeing a real generational shift. There was a recent study done that found 1% of baby boomers are vegetarian, 4% of Gen Xers, but 12% of millennials identify as vegetarian. And I believe that animal rights is a social justice issue, and it's one of the most pressing of our time if you look at the number of individuals suffering and the degree of suffering. And these animals depend on us to be their voice in our society. And I think how we treat those who we relate to the least and those who we have total power over, which in this situation are animals, says a lot about who we are as people.
All right, that's got to be the
truly be kind.
Last word there. Mercy for Animals, Nathan Runkle, thank you. Buy this book. It's brilliant. Thank you, Nathan.
Thanks for having me.